This is Leo Babiu for KTWH. We are Two Harbors Community Radio, and we're honored today to be speaking to former Governor Arne Carlson, two-term governor of state of Minnesota from 1991 to 1999. And I believe he also served as state auditor as well as in the Minnesota legislature, all those positions under the label of Republican. And want to welcome you to the airwaves. And how are you today, Governor Carlson?
Well, fine, thank you. Fine indeed, thank you.
Yes, I had the privilege of at least seeing you on part of your visit on September 23rd. You came up to Duluth and you spoke about some of the economic, political, and environmental issues that have been raised by the proposed and now permitted Polymet copper sulfide mine that'll be, if it opens, it will be operating near Babbitt. There's been a stay of the permits based upon petition from several environmental groups. And that has to do with the process that's been followed and whether or not the MPCA took comments from the Environmental Protection Agency regulators in Region 5 in Chicago. That's one of many balls that are, I guess, in the air with the project. And there are a lot of us that have been tracking this quite carefully, and then others of us who kind of are just peripherally aware of who all the players are who are involved. I guess what's most important is really what's at stake for us as citizens, as individuals, and collectively. Would you be able to kind of summarize for you where you see the main stakes in this issue?
Yeah, I would be delighted. First of all, this is very likely the biggest contract in the history of the state of Minnesota. And yet it has bypassed the normal legislative process, which means virtually no public hearings, no public input, and frankly, too little public understanding. This should be the kind of issue that we should be vetting and holding public hearings all over the state of Minnesota so that all of us can, one, understand it and understand also the trade-offs. Let's start with the technology that's used in those dams. There'll be approximately three dams. That's what's contemplated long-term, three dams, each of them roughly the size of the Statue of Liberty. That same dam, that same technology, and the consultant who designed the dams in Brazil is the same consultant who helped in the design of the dams in Minnesota. That dam broke and caused roughly 270 lives. In Brazil, to say nothing of permanent environmental damage. Vale Corporation, which was responsible, has now put up $6 billion in reserve funds to cover the anticipated cost of this tragedy, $6 billion. In the state of Minnesota, and this is something that is starting to catch the attention of the Court of Appeals, we have virtually nothing set aside. Polymet has no money. Polymet is a shell of a Canadian corporation that has about $230+ million in debt and no revenue, no assets. So they're not in a position to pay anything in compensation if a tragedy or any kind of an accident were to occur. Now, they're 71 or 72% owned by Glencore, but Glencore is not a party to the contract and will assume no financial liability. So this is concern number one. If a tragedy were to occur, it would be in the billions of dollars. $6 billion would be more than one-third of the state of Minnesota's annual budget. So we're talking about an enormous amount of money that will result in substantial cuts in spending or significant tax increases or a combination of both. But suffice it to say, the governor and the legislature on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, have joined together for the purpose of making sure there are no public hearings, none whatsoever. Therein lies the problem. If this were a good project, you can bet your life they would love to have public hearings and tell the public how wonderful it's going to be. Secondly, the contract does not guarantee any employment. That's a hope, it's an expectation that about 350 jobs would be created. But we know that the mining industry is increasingly more automated and more robotic. And so the number of jobs anticipated will probably be significantly less, and many of them will require a background, if you will, in advanced technology, and many of those employees will be imported from other states. So the part of employment has never been nailed down. The third part has to do with the health issue. Lake Superior and the attendant rivers that flow into it provide the drinking water for the people of Duluth and the tribes that are on the shore. And yet there is no health study. The Governor Walz refuses to institute a health study, just as Governor Dayton before him did. To me, that's completely unconscionable. If nothing else, we should be absolutely certain that the drinking water is safe. We do know this, that the current technology, which is reverse osmosis, will allow 3% of the chemicals to float into the water as it currently is. So we will have some contamination. The question is whether or not, from a scientific and health perspective, it's a tolerable level. That can't be determined without a study. As to mercury, mercury will flow through undetected. Reverse osmosis cannot clean it out. This whole situation, frankly, begs of public hearings. And we can't get the governor to say public word one on this. We can't get Democrats or Republicans in leadership positions in the House and the Senate to say any word on this at all. The whole thing is a huge political scandal.
Governor Carlson, do we have precedent for the type of approach that would have these widespread or numerous hearings? Something in your experience when you were chief executive?
Yes, we took Northwest Airlines, and we insisted that be as public as could be. We want everybody to have input into it. It involves 20-some-odd thousand jobs in the metropolitan area. It involves enormous amounts of money being set aside for collateral in case something went wrong. It contained the guarantee of employment, and we went through the legislative process, and legislators spoke out in favor of it, against it, made all sorts of amendments, and much to the credit of the legislature, particularly the insistence of the Iron Range legislators, they added, I think, pretty close to 1,000 jobs to be created up in the range area. I think Chisholm was the biggest winner. You can only improve when you give the public the right to have input. Any contract of this size should automatically go through the legislative process. In this particular case, when you have a potential $6 billion liability, I would think the legislature would want to know that that's going to make a huge dent in their budget.
And to be clear, when the particular $6 billion liability is, I believe, what you're alluding to as the catastrophic event of earthen dam failure at the tailings pond.
Precisely.
And there could be many other liabilities should the forecast 500 years of treatment not really successfully
operate. You're absolutely
right.
You're absolutely right. The real question is, why are so many legislators quietly sitting on the sidelines? The honest truth is, this is about politics. It's not about jobs, and it's not about mining. It's about politics. The Democrats want to retain control of the 8th District. Republicans have, to a large extent, taken control of the 8th District, and so it's a big battleground. And both sides figure that this mining operation could do it. But look what in the world is being sacrificed. It is an appalling disgrace. Here you have President Trump and Governor Walz on the same page. You have Republicans and Democrats on the same page.
Yes.
And it's all designed to keep the public in the dark.
There has been much that has occurred during this process that has seemed to be the political leaders putting the onus for all of the decision-making on the backs of a couple of regulatory agencies with the state, our DNR,
MPCA. We know now that the process was corrupted. You had employees at the PCA, the assistant commissioner, with the knowledge, by the way, of the commissioner, I believe it's John Stein, basically asking the EPA not to convey their health concerns in writing, but do it over the phone so that we can withhold this information from the public during the public hearing process. So here we have, we as taxpayers, hiring employees to serve us, when in fact they fail to serve us and serve the interest of PolyMet. And then you look at Governor Walz's staff. His chief of staff came from the law firm that represents PolyMet. His deputy chief of staff and chief attorney comes from the same law firm and was also the legal counsel for PolyMet. And then the original policy director came from Tom Bach's Senate operation, and he is the architect of PolyMet in the legislature. So you had three PolyMet people in the Walt staff operation. That's incredible.
Against such a backdrop, it would seem that what you're saying is that we are not going to be very able to rely on either our current executive branch or much of our currently in power legislature, both sides of the political divide. You're saying both of them have accepted this compromise to allow this project to go through. And
you're absolutely right.
Wherein then lies any, aside from the courts, which is where it looks like much of it is playing out?
Well, I think two things are going to have to happen. One is we as a public have to recognize that both political parties are out of control. I'm now an independent, and I intend to remain that way. But both parties are out of control. They're both putting their political interest above the interest of the state and the nation. And that is not acceptable. And I'm being very mild in my comments on that. The second part is, I believe the court will come down very strong, at least on the financial side, but hopefully also they can't rule on the health side because that's not in the law, unfortunately. That law was designed back in the 1920s and 30s for iron ore. It wasn't designed for sulfide mining. But I do think they'll come down hard on the financial side and hopefully on the structure of the dams and the safety of those dams. And that gives us an opportunity to pressure our legislators. So one of the things that we should do is form a movement and get every single legislator, regardless of party, to sign an oath. And that oath is, I will always put the best interest of the public above any interest of the party or any special interests.
It almost begs the question of whether it's really now moneyed interest versus the people of Minnesota, and that the politicians are just caught in the crossfire and wanting to remain in power. It would seem that that's what you're saying, is that they see that the setup is as if they don't fully approve of the proposed project. They're against development, and that they're going to be primaried or just lose in a general election in the future because of money.
I think any time you represent the best interests of the public, you win election. That's what it's about. Their problem is the internal politics. So yes, money is certainly a big part of it. And political power for those on top, that's a big part of it. But every single legislator should recognize that they're there to serve the best interests of their district and their public. If they do that, they'll do fine in election. I'm sorry, I just don't have much sympathy for people who want to sit on the sidelines. If that's where you want to sit, don't run for office in the first place.
Is there a remedy at this point that would be coming from the legislative side of the balance here? It sounds like the executive
well,
authority isn't going to be changing the status quo.
A couple of good things have happened. I know of at least one, possibly two, people that are contemplating challenging Governor Walz in a primary. And we know that there's already a primary challenge in St. Paul. So I think there are going to be some challenges. I think there are a lot of Democrats that want to go back to the strength of their party, which has been to be very pro-consumer, very pro-open government, and very pro on the environment. And it's not just the environment being against jobs. I'm talking about the environment being compatible with job development. So I think there's going to be a lot of internal pressure building up for more primaries to bring back the concept of good government in Minnesota. I think a lot of people are appalled at the lack of public hearings. I haven't heard a single legislator able to explain why there are no public hearings. And I wish you as a radio comment, invite one of them on and tell us, why aren't there any public hearings?
That could be a very interesting conversation.
Pardon me?
No, that would be a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think more radio stations and newspapers should do that. Call their local legislature, find out why aren't there any public hearings.
You know, what I'm anticipating to hear is that in the permitting process, the DNR held the public hearings that are necessary in the process, as it's always traditionally been done, but that doesn't take into account the unprecedented nature of this project, I would think.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's so vast, of course it should go through public hearings. Plus, there's a contract here that should be vetted. If this thing, the proponents tell us this is all about creating jobs, then the contract should be made public so the public can understand that those jobs are not guaranteed, the wage levels are not guaranteed.
So just for those...
And there's no health study, nothing to protect the drinking water of thousands and thousands right. and thousands of people, and nothing to protect the Minnesota taxpayer from the potential liability that will easily reach into the billions of dollars.
Have you gotten any candid or, you know, direct responses from those you're challenging about what they see
no,
as the error of your analysis?
No, I've been with the governor's office since January, and I can't get anything concrete back, no.
Okay.
I think the best way to do it is to hold public debates, hold public forums, and kind of smoke elected leaders out into the open.
I've gotten the sense that there's been this kind of air of inevitability that folks have wanted to say, well, PolyMet has gone through all of its paces. This project can proceed as proposed, and that we'll worry about the future. Everybody's saying, well, we'll stop Twin Metals later.
Well, it's too late for that. It's too late. I would disagree. PolyMet will be so destructive to both the BWCA and Lake Superior. But I'm not in the least bit pessimistic. I think the courts are going to help us. I think they're going to require that we have some kind of transparency. And I think political pressures are going to continue to build up. The fact that you yourself have taken upon yourself to put a radio show on and reach an audience, and that audience hopefully will start to put pressure on their legislators. That's how movements get going.
I find it particularly telling that someone with your experience and someone who I believe, if you had asked me, I would have thought that you were quite pro-business, but within reason. It suggests that now the scales have been tipped so far on one side that our process isn't effective to seek the common good.
Yes, that's a very nice way to put it. No, I'm very pro-business. I'm very pro the creation of jobs. Absolutely, no question about it. That's one of the reasons we work so hard to keep Northwest Airlines, now Delta Airlines, here. We want good employment. We want good companies. But my God, look at the international record of Glencore. They are the number one outlaw in international law. They're currently under investigation by the Justice Department in the United States for money laundering. They're under investigation currently in the United Kingdom. They have had problems in South America, Africa, everywhere they have been, leaving behind tremendous damages, both environmentally and broken promises on jobs and on money. Anybody listening to this program, just Google Glencore, Glencore, and see for yourself. And by the way, bribery of public officials is one of the citations that most frequently comes up. No, this is not the kind of company we should be doing business with at all.
I have a follow-up question on that. This is Leo Baibu on KTWH 99.5 FM. I have Governor Arne Carlson on the phone today. And in regards to Glencore, exactly what niche did they fill in this whole investor sponsorship scenario of what the PolyMet Corporation, which is, of course, in debt and actually needs funding to even build
right.
the mine, where does Glencore fit in, and where does their role possibly suddenly end should the chips fall wrong and there be major liabilities? Will they be out of the picture?
Absolutely. Glencore, what Glencore is doing right now is using PolyMet as a shell corporation and having the shell corporation enter into the contracts with state officials. That's what they've done. Glencore is not a signatory, so they're not legally bound on anything. So their goal will be to enter, to extract copper or whatever mining materials they want, and then to leave. And they will leave behind a situation that is intolerable. But they will not be liable for one penny. That raises the interesting question, why is it that nobody in the Walz administration or the Dayton administration will tell us who negotiated this contract? And why are they trying to keep this contract under wraps?
Well, who are the
signatories?
Ask yourself, yeah.
Right now, PolyMet does not have the financial strength to insure a bicycle. Why in the world do we have a contract with them at all?
It would have to be inferred that because we think that they have a big source of funding behind them, and that's the only way they're ever going to build the project.
Well, then anybody with an IQ of room temperature would say that I want the big funding source to sign on the contract.
Well, that would appear to be the obvious
conclusion. Yeah, that hasn't happened. So I want to know who put this contract together And how can two consecutive governors tell us this is a good contract? I mean, this is unbelievable.
So you're saying no hands are going up to indicate who's responsible for this?
No, John Kennedy once said something about success having unlimited parents and failure that dies an orphan, and how true it is.
Oh, my. Well, I did want to go back to the fact that in this conversation, you said you were very optimistic, so that seems to be a positive way to try to conclude
our
conversation.
The Court of Appeals is going to open the door, and I think from there on in, we, the public, have to force the legislature to open up some hearings.
Okay.
I mean, the liability question alone could throw our budget, our state budget, into absolute havoc.
You think that one of the things that is behind people's reluctance to act is the fact that everybody thinks this might be a long ways off in the future? In other words, not actually their problem on their
watch? That's a very good question and a very good observation. I'm afraid you're right. Yeah, it's not going to happen on my watch, so who cares? You know, but look at it this way. I'm 85 years old. I'm involved. Not because it's going to, frankly, help me. I'm fearful I'll be gone by the time those dams burst. But you want to leave behind something that's very positive and very meaningful. The northern part of our state is a lovely area. We have 36,000-plus employees on the state level. We have over 2,700 employees in the Department of Natural Resources alone. I wrote a blog some time back asking the governor, start to think about how you can move more state jobs up north, how you can create more economic vitality in that region without relying on destroying the strength of that area. With the internet and electronics, we have the opportunity to create many more opportunities for job development in northern Minnesota, rural parts of the state, than we ever had before. And by the way, that kind of migration is now taking place. The University of Minnesota put out a study recently that said more and more people are coming into rural Minnesota than ever before. Well, we want to make sure that not only does that trend continue, but that it grows. So make an effort to grow jobs, but don't put Lake Superior and the BWCA in harm's way for jobs that may or may not even come about.
Well, it certainly seems that jobs that might blossom with a kind of a green tourism bent to it could be directly threatened by exactly the kind of activity that we're talking about today, of mines.
Absolutely. It's not just tourism and fishing, but there's a tremendous amount of potential up there. I mean, think about it this way, very, very broadly. In the metropolitan area, we are too crowded and too congested. Rural area is the opposite. So doesn't it make sense to do things to entice more metropolitan people to live outside of the metropolitan area? And one of the ways to do it is to move pieces of state government from the metro area out into rural Minnesota. The Department of Natural Resources, most of its activities are outside anyway. So why not move employees up?
Indeed.
At least start exploring that. But what has happened is nobody, the legislature and the governor, don't want to open up any door to any discussion for fear that the public will begin to ask serious questions about the contract and about all the flaws and all the corruption that has already occurred.
If I can remind myself again that the major elements of the contract, as you describe it, between our state and the proponent of the PolyMet NorthMet mine project is in the proposed jobs, which no one will be accountable for if they're not delivered, and the financial assurance for failure the dam and or future pollution from the general operation and closure. We've got two big components. Is that what you see as the contract? It's helpful because it's not always the lens you hear it talked about through.
Yes, you're absolutely right. We're putting up as collateral the BWCA, all the rivers and streams that are affected in Lake Superior. And we're basically saying that we run the risk of permanent harm that will ruin the economies, the health, and everything else of that area in return for the possibility of 350 jobs being created. It's much cheaper for the state of Minnesota to move its employees up there than it is to get on this foolish venture.
And I would point out that it's all based on an economy that's kind of reliant on this spot commodities market, and the prices fluctuating.
Right.
And if we were to have a sufficient rigor in our regulation of this mine, it might very well become like the least profitable margin-wise, you know, in a company's holdings, and might very well be idled for off and on for the whole its whole lifespan. It might have periods of boom and bust.
Yeah, there's no guarantee of anything here. Basically, PolyMet and Glencore haven't really guaranteed much of anything. What's guaranteed is on our side of the ledger. We're the ones that are putting up the water. We're the ones that's putting up our lives and the economies that will be adversely affected. We're putting everything on the line for what? For a promise. And by the way, from a company that has probably one of the most roguish reputations in the world.
And that being Glencore, correct? And then,
oh my gosh!
And then on the other hand, is a company that has never operated a mine or done any productive work.
They're strictly a shell corporation.
That being PolyMet.
Think of Glencore this way: Glencore was created by Mark Rich. Mark Rich is that billionaire who evaded all sorts of laws in the United States, was convicted, sent to jail, and then President Clinton, on his last day in office, pardoned him. That's who started this company, and they've been an international outlaw ever since. The name of their game has been very simple, and that is to go into countries, bribe public officials, enter, extract whatever ore that or commodity that you want, and leave behind a mess. Why in the world are we even doing business with them?
Well, you've asked really probing questions, and I'm not expecting to hear answers.
What would also be good. I'd like to know why Governor Walz doesn't go on a radio station and answer some questions. I'd like to know why he's not making any public appearances. Let me just point this out. I publicly supported Governor Walz, and I could not be more bitterly disappointed. He promised transparency, and he's practicing secrecy. And the same goes for the legislative leaders. The Republicans are marching lockstep with Donald Trump, and the Democrat leaders are marching lockstep with both Walz and Trump.
Wow, and when you put it that way.
Very difficult for the public, very difficult.
You've posed there that seems like a dire scenario, and we've been focusing on what's happening in our state and how there might be political dysfunction here, but do you feel that this all ties into the prospects of us as a whole wider American society,
yeah,
about how our current administration scandals and the way Trump operates?
I'm fearful.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, right off the bat, when you look through the various documents that we now know, Governor Walz should have known that there was corruption in the PCA in January, and if they didn't then, they had to know by April. And yet the response of the administration has been to do absolutely nothing.
And so now it's all in the hands of the courts to somehow rebalance.
The courts were never designed to clean up messes created by executive branches and legislative branches.
So then you would suggest that in an upcoming election, for instance, the even year election, that there's...
That be the issue.
That has to be the issue.
You have corruption in the PCA, and the chief executive officer of the state, the governor, stood by and did nothing. Is that the kind of governance we want? And then look at the consequences. My heavens, the drinking water would... If we destroy the drinking water of Lake Superior with arsenic and mercury, we can't eat the fish, the whole fishing industry is destroyed, the tourist industry is destroyed, tribes are destroyed, lives are destroyed. The cost in terms of both human and financial terms are astronomical. And yet we can't get one single legislative leader. We cannot get the governor to go public and answer any questions. It's interesting that I'm on the radio with you tonight.
Yeah.
And yet all these people who put this big deal together, not one of them has spent 30 seconds answering questions.
Well, maybe I should pose that question to all of those who are members of the Fourth Estate in radio and print journalism. It's time to start asking more questions.
Because all we're getting as a public is stonewalling.
And more often than that, all I see is reporting that just passes along what the latest development is with an agency issuing a permit or a specific appeal to a specific court of appeals. And I'm not seeing much analysis and detailed investigative reporting.
Not at all. No. Curiously enough, what you're seeing in Washington with Democrats in the House of vetting, issuing subpoenas, trying to get to the bottom of one scandal after another, here in Minnesota, is the reverse. Total stonewalling, total silence, total darkness. I mean, if you have employees of the Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Natural Resources withholding vital data from the very public they're supposed to serve, that is corruption. That's what corruption is. And the governor is responsible for it and responsible to clean it up. And yet nothing has happened.
And I'm trying to think of the precedent for an executive actually exposing, and this would be wrongdoing and or corruption that happened not just in one administration, but two, is what you're suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, these kinds of things, and not necessarily on this scale, because this scale is fairly large, but you're going to have all sorts of missteps and miscues that happen from an administrative perspective, and you expect the governor to very quickly and very intelligently handle it and put an end to it. In this particular case, nothing's been done.
Well, I only have you talking to me, so hopefully if I get other people talking to me, maybe I'll hear another perspective about this. But where would you see this turning within the next year or so? What will be the pivotal decisions?
Well, I think what the court does in the next, I don't know when the court's going to make a decision, but when the court makes this decision, I think that's going to cause a tremendous amount of change. At least I hope so. And I hope the court comes down with some good, blunt language.
It almost appears
because what's at stake here, frankly, is the future of Minnesota. Just imagine Minnesota with a poisoned Lake Superior and a poisoned BWCA. We're the land of 10,000 lakes. Right now, we know that 40% of those lakes and streams are polluted, 40%. And just imagine if we add the BWCA and Lake Superior to it.
Indeed.
What in the world will the future of Minnesota be?
We're sitting on the headwaters of an entire continent, and there's a lot at stake.
Yes, and if the mining expands, and they've done some exploration on that, if these mines expand, sulfite mining expands, it will very likely affect the waters of the Mississippi River and the St. Croix as well.
Thank you so much for being with us, Governor Arne Carlson.
Well, I'm delighted, and anytime you want to set up a debate with any of the members of with the governor or some of the legislative leaders, I'd be happy to participate.
Well, I sure appreciate that offer. I think you would make a formidable force to be reckoned with, and I'm not sure who I'm going to get from another perspective, but I will give it a try. I will give it a try.
Good show. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for being with us, Governor Arne Carlson. I hope you, and I interrupted you on your vacation, so I appreciate very much you spending time with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Okay. Take care. That was Minnesota Governor Arne Carlson. He served as the chief executive of this state from 1991 to 1999. He was also state auditor and served in the Minnesota legislature, all on the GOP ticket. This is Leo Babeau for KTWH 99.5 FM. We're Two Harbors Community Radio, heard online at ktwh.org.